let's just start with some of your background, how you became a writer, how you became an editor. You've got a wonderful history here, 13 books and chapbooks. You've done readings across the globe.
I have.
Yeah. So tell me about your journey, ML.
I started writing when I was really young, and I have to say that I did not know really what I was doing. I just was scribbling my feelings and thoughts, usually in school books, and getting in trouble for it. That's when I was in like second grade.
Mm-hmm.
So as time went, and I'm not going to go all the way through my history, but that's how I started with it. I didn't really know what I was, you know, I was writing poetry. I didn't know anything about poetry. I'm from a working class family. I was raised by my grandparents. They did not read poetry. I don't think they knew any poetry. So it just kind of happened like that. And as I went through fifth grade and then, you know, junior high school, I knew I was writing poetry then, and I was just compelled to always do that. And then also I was really heavily influenced by my grandmother, who loved Elvis Presley and gave me my first Elvis album when I was four. So I kind of had this feeling to write words down and this love of rock and roll, and those kind of merged to create the person that I guess I have become.
Well, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about today was Wayne State University Press is celebrating their 10th anniversary. And you, along with Mike Delp, were an editor for Bob Seger's House and other stories.
Yes.
When I was reading the foreword on that, in which you and Mike wrote together, I guess, you said
yes.
You were a champion, or one of you said that you were a champion for Detroit's gritty art and culture, channeling the industrial chaos. I thought that was wonderful. So talk a little bit more about that, being a champion for that gritty art culture.
Yeah, well, I come from a working class background. Rule number one of the working class is never forget where you came from. So I started at Wayne State in 1980, and that was my first job, per se, and I've been there since. And it turns out I was actually born at what was a hospital right on campus there. It's now the School of Mortuary Science, which is interesting.
Yeah.
But that's where I was born. I knew I was born in a hospital called Art Center, but I thought it was owned by some guy named Art. I mean, I didn't really get it that it was. Now I see it's right next to the historical museum, actually, and
yeah,
across from the DIA. But so anyway, I've been at Wayne State since 1980. I have
now teaching or at the
teaching.
Press. Yeah,
no,
that's
teaching.
What I thought.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I went to school at Oakland University for my education, but I started teaching there, and I've been there ever since, and happily so. But I'm, you know, immersed in the city culture, and I'd always been a writer and a poet and sort of an activist in small terms, I guess. I started a literary group at Oakland University, and then early in the 80s, I became a member of the Poetry Resource Center of Michigan, which was sort of the literary arts organization. And they made me the president of it against my will a few years into my membership, like the mid-80s.
Mm-hmm.
And I led that until 1992, basically once Engler came in and killed the arts. By that time, I was getting phone calls from New York City, from the National Writer's Voice Project at the YMCA, and they wanted to open a Writer's Voice in Detroit at a local YMCA. So I became the person to do that, and I did that for 10 years and built quite a big organization and scene, and then moved on from there to Spring Fed Arts and some other things. I'm actually... Again, I got this thing about being elected president. I was just made president of the Detroit Writers Guild a couple of months ago. So I'm trying to resurrect this longtime city organization that was founded by Peggy Moore in the early 80s. It originally was the Black Writers Guild. It is now the Detroit Writers Guild. So I guess I'm continuing to do that. And in doing that, I set up readings and workshops and I've been working with the Hannon Foundation on campus and helping build a literary center there, where I'd like to move the Detroit Writers Guild, sort of merge the two together at the Hannon House.
So tell me how you and Delp became the editors for this anthology.
Well, I think Annie Martin, who is the editor in charge of the Made in Michigan series, which that's what's celebrating 10 years. The actual press is 75 years old this year. But 10 years ago, Annie had this vision to do a literary series, which is pretty unusual for university presses. They're not known for doing poetry and fiction as much as academic books. But she had a vision for that, and she knew me because I had done a Wayne State book in 2000 of Detroit poems. And she tapped me from the Detroit area, and Michael Delp is from, you know, Interlochen. Mm-hmm. So she thought that would be a good combination. Plus, he's pretty well known in the north of Michigan as well.
Right.
So by putting us two together, she figured she could, you know, she would be able to build a good series of eclectic writers, which I think that's proven to be very successful for the Made in Michigan series. So that's, you know, he was kind of known in the north. Of course, I knew him. I've known him for years, but and he knew me in the south. And actually, he's the one, I think, that probably said the thing that you read about the urban, you know, pioneer or whatever. Mm-hmm. Those were Delp's words, which, you know, which are very kind, and I appreciate them. But the idea, I think.
Talk to me about the selection process. That can't be easy. There are so many excellent writers in this state. How did you go about doing that?
Well, I look at what I do, and I'm sure Delp looks at it that way too, is we're kind of like scouts, you might say. We keep our ears and eyes open to talent in our various regions, him in the north and me down in the Metro Detroit area. And when we kind of find writers, I mean, some of them are very well-known writers, of course, but like Michael Zadorian.
Yeah.
But we look for writers that, you know, would fit the series. For example, Michael Zadorian's a very successful novelist. Mm-hmm. But many novelists have books of short stories that national publishers aren't interested in. When they contract a novelist, unless they become really, really, you know, big, huge money makers, they're not interested in short stories. So a lot of times we have tapped people like a Michael Zadorian or a Laura Kashicki or others who have short story collections that, you know, their national publisher isn't interested in. Or sometimes they're new writers with a great short story collection, and, you know, it's as their first major manuscript.
Right.
And then poetry, you know, I'm always looking for eclectic, unique poets, diverse poets around the city and in the metro area. And when I see some, or I come across reading writers, poets in particular, who I think are pretty good and worthy of, you know, they're not just starting out, I will recommend them then to Annie in the press, and then they kind of do their review process from there. And Michael does the same thing up in Interlochen in the north.
Now, Michigan series, the Michigan Writers series, what makes a writer Michigan other than the address that they live at? Do you find that there's a sense of place, or when you looked at all these different writers, was there some commonality?
Yeah, I think Michigan overall, and I, you know, this is what I've been teaching here in Lunenburg in Germany, is Detroit studies, more or less, and that question's come up about Detroit, and I think it does extend to the state of Michigan. Our location, our placement, our pretty much working class roots from, you know, the UP to Toledo, and I think all in between, you know, create an interesting and different kind of person and writer in particular, since we're talking about literature. they come from a different place that you really can sense when you read, you know, the stories, most of them in Bob Seger's house. I think that comes across. But also, you know, the poetry portion of things, there's something unique about being a Detroit writer in the sense of, you know, you have to survive all of the cuts to the arts, cuts to jobs, loss of income. Sometimes people lose their houses, you know, in recent times.
Yeah.
And they still keep creating. And that's what the German students noticed about all aspects of Detroit culture. And some of them had been here in Detroit in March. That there's this resiliency that you have to kind of develop if you're going to succeed. And if you're, you know, easily bowled over, then Detroit's not the place for you. And but if you continue to do your work, I think you can succeed. But it does create a different style, a different tone. Many times different, you know, themes emerge from literature written in Detroit, Metro Detroit. And I think that extends to the state.
Do you have any background on why was the Made in Michigan writer series developed? What was the goal there, the motivation?
Well, I think Annie Martin had this idea that, hey, we should look into publishing creative writing by Michigan's creative writers. And there wasn't anyone doing that at the time. And there was no one that had, meaning when I say that, no university presses in Michigan that specifically had a series dedicated to poetry, creative nonfiction, and fiction like this, where they were doing, I think we started out doing 4 books a year right from the beginning. And then sometimes we've done 6, 7 in a year, you know, of all types. Now, Western Michigan started years ago with the great poet, the late poet Herb Scott, the New Issues press. Now, but New Issues, which is a great press, and I'm honored to have been part of that and on that label too, was strictly poetry.
Mm-hmm.
So Annie may have thought about that and then, you know, well, let's include all creative writing. And it's an unusual move for a university press, I would think. And I think Annie's hunch paid off big time because it's become very popular. It is, you know, not easy to get in because of the limited number of books and the number of writers in Michigan. But a lot of times I tell people to try again if they get rejected because it all depends what manuscripts are coming in.
Yeah.
And many of those people resubmitted a couple of years or more later and did end up, you know, having a book published. So it's pretty fair in that way, and it's pretty open to, I think you need to be an experienced writer. If this is the first time you've ever written poetry in a book of poetry, it's probably not the place to you know, put your feet in the water. But there's so many experienced writers all around Michigan. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, yeah. Any goals for the next 10 years?
Well, I imagine we'll continue to do what we're doing, which really is more than 4 a year. And I imagine it could get maybe up a little bit higher than that. But what it's been able to do is maintain for 10 years and not be threatened by budget cuts and things like that. And, you know, many of the titles that are published or, you know, pretty much all of them, you know, sell well enough that they're more than paying for themselves and putting some money back in so we can continue to do it.
Well, thanks so much, ML, for talking with us today about Bob Seger's house and other stories and the first 10 years of the Made in Michigan Writers series.